Hi, Krishna, everybody. Sorry, we're a little late. But welcome to Krishna in Vrindavan. Today we're going to be reading from chapter 11 of the 10th canto. It's called the Childhood Pastimes of Krishna. And we're going to talk about Krishna being like a little child, being controlled by the orders and the desires of the older cowherd women and cowherd men, how he reciprocates with the fruit vendor, and if we get time, how the residents of Gokul move to Vrindavan and why they do that and what happens there. Okay. So let's sing the Krishna song. Krishna, 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 Krishna. Hey. Krishna, 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 Krishna. Hey, Krishna, 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 Rakshamam. Krishna, 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 Pahimam. Rama, Raghava, Rama, Raghava, Rama, Raghava, Rakshamam. Krishna, Keshava, Krishna, Keshava, Krishna, Keshava, Pahimam. I always get out of breath in that song. Okay. So yesterday we left off with Krishna pulling down the trees, the two Yamala Arjun trees. And when he did that, then these two effulgent demigods appeared from the trees. That was Nalakuvara and Manigriva. And they were liberated from the curse of Narada. And they went back to their abode in the heavenly planets. And so now we're going to start with the aftermath of that, which is that as soon as when those trees came crashing down, then it made such a huge noise. It was like, you know, when you hear sometimes you hear a branch, like in Florida, we have these rotten old tree branches and they fall off the trees and they make a big thud and sometimes they make a crashing sound. And so, you know, people might go and see what the damage was. Did it land on someone's car? Did it land on someone's head? So you go to see what the damage was. So what to speak of a huge tree. And remember, these trees were thousands of years old. So they were like bigger than the giant sequoia redwood trees in Northern California. So when and two of them both fell down, then they made such a big noise that everybody came running. And the demigods had already gone by then. So now it's just these two trees. This is a scene. Courtyard of Nandaraja's house, two trees totally uprooted, and then Krishna sitting there with the rope still tied around him. He's still tied to the wooden grinding mortar. And then there are some children around there, some of Krishna's little friends. Okay, so then Nandaraj, Mother Yashoda, they all arrive on the scene. When Mother Yashoda sees Krishna next to those huge fallen trees, she becomes so overwhelmed by the thought of what could have happened that she faints on the spot. Even though he's sitting there like totally fine, but just the thought of what could have happened was too much for her to bear. And then everybody else is just sitting there looking at those huge trees and totally bewildered because there was no storm, there was no earthquake, there was nothing that would have made those huge trees fall. And they weren't rotten, they weren't, you know, like that. So they were like strong, solid trees, and they just suddenly, for no apparent reason, came crashing down, both at the same time. So they couldn't trace out the cause. And then they looked at Krishna. And they just started asking, you know, what happened? What could have pulled these trees down? Who could have done it? And they were just really bewildered. And there happened to be some little children. The children there had seen the whole thing. So the children were saying, well, actually, Krishna was crawling here, and you know, the mortar got stuck between the two trees, and he just kept crawling and he pulled the trees down. And these two beautiful, fulgent people came out and they just flew off into the sky. And the elder people are looking at these little children who are just like, you know, about 3 or 4 years old and just like, like, are we supposed to believe that? Like, this little tiny baby pulled down these huge trees? Yeah, right? Like, the kids are just, they just can't believe it. And then, but they're thinking, well, I mean, it's true that Gargamuni said that this child, when he did the astrological chart, when he made his prediction about his future, he said this child is as good as Narayan. So the thought did cross their mind, but immediately their affection, their parental affection for Krishna just like drove away that thought. They just couldn't accept that Krishna did it. So they were just kind of like standing there wondering what was going on. And then finally Nanda Maharaj was just like, whatever, it doesn't matter. At least Krishna is safe. And then he goes there and he picks up Krishna and he unties him from the mortar, finally. So, yeah. So Nandaraj releases Krishna, but he's worried that maybe Krishna was a little traumatized by these two trees, because he's a little kid and these huge trees fell like, you know, that far from him. So maybe he's scared, maybe he's shaken up. And so Nandaraj knows that when Krishna's upset, when he's, you know, anything happens, he goes running to Mother Yashoda. Mother Yashoda is like his comfort, security person. So then Nanda Maharaj is saying, then of course Yashoda fainted. But by this time she's like came back to consciousness, and Nanda Maharaj has Krishna. So he takes it and he wants to hand Krishna over to Mother Yashoda that she's going to comfort him and feed him and he's going to be okay. But then Krishna, he says, I don't want to go to her. She chased me with a stick. She tied me to this mortar. She's the cause of all this trouble that happened. She put me in all this trouble. And then, so Nanda Maharaj is like, oh. And of course, this is like really hard for Yashoda to take, you know? And Nanda Maharaj also, he's like, oh my God, what to do? This has never happened before. This is totally unprecedented that Krishna will not go to his mother. You know, like his mother is the most dear person in his life. And, you know, he can't live without his mother. So then Nanda Maharaj says, well, I mean, if you don't go to Mother Yashoda, then who's going to feed you? Because, you know, you are still breastfeeding and I can't feed you milk. So, yeah, because first Krishna's like, I'll just stay with you, daddy. And he's like, but I can't feed you. And then Krishna says, no problem. I'll take milk from the cows. You just take me to the Goshala. So then, and he utterly refuses to go to Mother Yashoda. So Nanda Maharaj has no choice. He takes him to the cow barn. And then Krishna just goes up to the cows and starts drinking milk from the cow. So that was, the cows had this desire. And the cows in Krishna's pastimes are also, they're not just ordinary cows. They're all devotees of Krishna. They're all eternally liberated souls in the form of cows. That they take that form of cows to serve Krishna, to provide milk for Krishna. So they see that Krishna is always, you know, taking milk directly from Mother Yashoda. And they're like, ah, wouldn't it be so nice for Krishna to drink milk directly from us? And so Krishna fulfills the desire of these cows. So then Krishna's just hanging out in the cow barn with the cows, who are also a mother, right? Mother cow. And Mother Yashoda is in the house, just like totally lamenting. Nanda Maharaj is trying to console all the cowherd women that usually complain about stealing butter and things from their house. They go to the barn and they go to Krishna and they say, Krishna, if you don't go and you know, accept Mother Yashoda's loving desire to feed you, and you know, you can't just go on rejecting your mother like this. And just go to your mother, and otherwise she's going to die of sadness. So then when the other women come, then he's like, okay, I can't go on neglecting her. I don't want my mother to die, you know, I still love my mother. And so finally he agrees and he goes back and he, you know, jumps on Mother Yashoda's lap and gives her a hug and looks at her face with his big brown eyes, and she looks at his face and her eyes are streaming with tears, and she gives him a big hug. And everything's good again. So, yeah. So then here the commentators say that although Mother Yashoda bound Krishna with the ropes, but actually Krishna bound Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj with the bonds, the ropes of love. That their love for him was so strong, they were just bound to him. Like their lives had no meaning without him. So they say that, they talk about how Krishna binds everyone in one way or another. So conditions souls who are not interested in him, he binds them with the ropes of the three modes of material nature. So the three gunas, sattva-guna, rajaguna, and tamaguna, goodness, passion, ignorance. The word guna also means rope. So people in the material world who basically rejected Krishna, then Krishna ties them up with the ropes of these modes, or you could say also karmic reactions, that we're entangled, we're tied up in this world because of our karmic reactions. And then his devotees, he binds with the ropes of love. So that's the difference. So what we want to try to do is break these ropes of karma and break the ropes of the modes of material nature, or not that we can break them, but surrender to Krishna and beg him to break them and ask him to also tie us with the ropes of love. And that's something that we learn from this pastime. So then after that, there are all these very sweet stories about how we're using this phrase over the past few days, bhakta vashyata. Does anyone remember what it means? Bhakta vatsala means he's favorably disposed towards the devotees. Bhakta vashyata is something else.
He's controlled.
Yeah, he becomes subordinate to his devotees. So now we're going to hear some places, some ways in which Krishna is bhakta vashyata. So I'm reading now from 11.7. It says here that the gopis, so this is the elderly gopis, like Mother Yashoda and her friends, they say, if you dance, my dear Krishna, then I shall give you half a sweetmeat. So they have all these sweet balls. They have burfis, they have rasagula, they have sandesh, and they have, you know, ladu and things. And so they tell Krishna, they're just sitting around, the women are sitting around in the courtyard, and Krishna's there and say, Krishna, you do a little dance, I'll give you half of a sweet. Not even a whole sweet, only half. So then Krishna's like, he does a little dance for them, and then they're like, okay, come get your sweet, and then he comes. So Krishna, and then while he's dancing, they'll be singing. They'll start singing and clapping their hands. Hey, Krishna, we're going to sing, you dance, and you dance nicely, we'll give you a sweet. Like that. So, yeah. Prabhupada comments how, although Krishna is the controller of great demigods like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, Lord Indra, and all these demigods, but he's controlled by he's like a little, dancing like a little puppet there, according to the desire of the gopis, the women of Vrindavan. So yeah, it says at such times, although he was the supremely powerful personality of God, and he would dance and smile according to the desire, as if he were a wooden doll in their hands. And sometimes at their bidding, he would also sing. They would make him sing some songs. In this way, Krishna came completely under the control of the gopis. So then also they would sometimes test him, because he's a little boy, he's growing up. And you know how children, they like to bring things, like you play the game where they will bring that to me, and then they put it in your hand and you take it, and then you give back and they take. So they like to do that thing, exchange of give and take. So the gopi friends of Mother Yashoda would tell Krishna, oh, go and bring the shoes over there. And then, like you've probably seen the picture, right? He's carrying the wooden shoes of Nandaraj on his head. So he'll bring the shoes, and they'll say, oh, go and bring that thing. Go bring the, you know, the clay pot. So then he brings the clay pot. And then they'll say, now go and bring the heavy crate there. And then he goes, and sometimes if the thing is too heavy, he'll just walk over there, he'll stand next to it, he'll try to lift it, but he can't lift it, and then he'll just go like that and then just stand there looking sad, like, I can't do it, I'm too weak. So this is like, you know, Krishna, who's holding up all the planetary systems, like in his expansion, just partial expansion of Ananta Shesh. He's at the bottom of the universe, and he's holding all the universes on his head. And each universe is like a mustard seed on it, like compared to like a mustard seed on our head. Like if you have a mustard seed on your head, you don't even feel it. You know, like you don't even know it's there because it's so small and so light. And Ananta Shesh is holding millions of universes on his heads and supporting the weight of the whole thing. And Ananta Shesh is just one little partial expansion of Krishna, not even a complete expansion of Krishna. And then, but Krishna can't pick up the box that they're telling you. He's just so like that. But then sometimes, like if he would think that he could lift something, he would do the, you know, go like that, like just see how strong I am. Yeah, and then after he lifted Govardhan Hill, and nobody could understand what was going on. So, yeah, so in these different ways, he gave a lot of pleasure to the Vrajavasis. Yeah, just acting like an ordinary baby who was totally dependent on them. Some of them are the tapping of the boxes here. Yep.
But otherwise,
yeah, there's more that's given in other places. Like there's Ananda Vrindavan Champu describes a lot of detail. And Kavi Karnapur. And then there's the commentaries of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Because the same thing is like, even in Rupa Goswami's books, he gives more details of pastimes. Because what we get in the Bhagavatam is kind of like, you know, there's only so much that Shukadeva Goswami could say in 7 days. But there's so much more to Krishna's pastimes. Krishna's pastimes are unlimited. His incarnations are unlimited. You know, like the incarnations that are described in the Bhagavatam, you know, are countable. You can count them. But it's described that the incarnations of Krishna are like the waves on the ocean. You sit there and, you know, you can't count the waves. The waves are endless. They're always coming more. And you can't even see across the ocean. It's just like, it's just unfathomable how many waves there are. And there's always more coming. So like that. So the pastimes of Krishna are also unlimited. And we have here just a little sampling. And even the pastimes here that we get a sample of, it's brief. It's just, you know, a little tiny little hint at what's going on. So then great devotees like Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and the Goswamis, they study these pastimes and they meditate on them. And then in their, because they're pure devotees, then Krishna, Srila Prabhupada described it, he talks about this in a class, how very advanced devotees, in their meditations, it's like they can perceive Krishna's pastimes like watching, like a person watching TV. You know, the pastimes are just being enacted in their hearts and in their minds so vividly as you're just like sitting in front of a screen and watching a movie. So they're seeing it go on and they're seeing all these small details that aren't necessarily described here. And then in their books, we get these little more information. Pretty qualified. So for now, we're relying on the descriptions of those who are qualified. And that's why they write those. That's why they write those books, is for our own edification. But also we have to be sure of our sources again, you know, make sure that the sources are bona fide. And for now, whatever's in the Bhagavatam is sufficient. You know, like that's enough. And as we advance in devotional service, then, you know, at some point in our spiritual life, maybe our spiritual master or Shiksha Gurus will recommend that we read other books. But for now, we have to read Prabhupada's books, like all of Prabhupada's books, and just focus on that. And yeah.
But sometimes when people are retelling, sometimes it looks like they're actually seeing it. Like they're retelling it, and it's like they're there, describing it at least. Like, but I'm not trying to retell the past sentence.
Yeah, yeah, because you pure devotee, when you're hearing it, you get absorbed in it, and it is like you're being there. It's like you're there. Almost. Yeah. So, let's see here. Yeah, says it. Not a blade of grass moves, but by the will of Krishna. But Krishna is moving by the will of these older gopis who would tell him, oh, they would say, Krishna, can you touch your nose? And he would touch his nose. He would put his lotus finger. Yeah. He would put his little lotus finger on his lotus nose and they would say, very good, you're such a clever boy. Yeah. So, okay. So now we'll go to the next pastime here, which is the fruit vendor. So starting from text 10. Once a woman selling fruit was calling, oh, inhabitants of Rajabhumi, if you want to purchase some fruits, come here. So then this was a common thing that these this woman, she was not a village woman. She was like an aborigine, like a tribal woman who lived in the forest. So in Vrindavan, there are the villagers who are the cowherd men and cowherd women, and they're farmers. They cultivate the land, they take care of cows, and they do all that. And then there are also, like, because Vrindavan is a forest, there are 12 forests, and in the forest there are these tribal people who don't live in the village. They just live in the forest, and so they know all these forest crafts, and they pick fruits from the trees out there. They pick flowers, like wild fruits and wild flowers, and they make things out of, you know, they make like baskets and things out of the branches, and they make all sorts of things from forest resources. And then they go into the village and sell those. So this woman, she had picked some fruits, different kinds of wild fruits from the trees, and she brings them in her basket, and she would just go around all the different houses and be like, fruits, fruits, anybody want fruits? Like that. So then it was a common thing, and Krishna had seen his mother and the different like household servants many times going out and buying fruits from this lady and or similar, you know, these tribal people. And because in those days they would use a barter system, so they would just get some rice, or, you know, maybe they would get a pot of yogurt or whatever they had, and they would give to the rice is probably more convenient because she can just put it in her bag, you know, it's not messy. So they would go with rice. And they would go with like some container with rice, give her the rice, take the fruits, like that. And that way everyone would have everything they needed. So Krishna, he thought, okay, he saw her there and he was like, okay, I'm coming. And he goes, he gets some rice. But because he's little, he's only like two, then he can only fit like, you know, small amount of rice in his little hand. So he's got one hand that's full of rice. And then he's running out there because he doesn't want her to go away because they don't stay forever there. And then he's running, he's dropping the rice. He gets there, there's like only three or four grains of rice in his little sweaty little hand. And then, so he goes there and he smiles at her and he shows her the rice like that. And then she sees his little feet that, you know, he's got a bluish complexion and the bottom of his feet are pink and they're like little lotuses. They're like, you know, pinkish lotuses that are buds, you know, that the outside is like green and the inside is pink, and it's going to open so that outside is like blue and the inside is pink. And then she's seeing all this, his feet are like little lotus buds and his little hands like a lotus flower that's opened, and there's little rice there. And she's just so like charmed by his sweetness and his beauty and his childish like innocence, just imitating his parents. And she just gives him all the fruits. She's just emptying her basket into his arms. And it said that, like, remember we're talking about the Aishvarya potency is always wanting to serve him. So the Aishvarya, the opulence, the mystic opulence potency is like, here's a great chance to serve him. I can somehow or other make him carry all these fruits. So although he's just got little hands and little arms, but he was holding all the fruits in a basket. She emptied them all out. She was just giving, she just wanted to give everything to Krishna. She was just like really surrendering to Krishna in that moment, wanting to offer everything to him, including her own heart. And then Krishna, he wanted to reciprocate with her. So he gave her the rice, but he also, when she turned around, her basket was full of jewels, like really valuable emeralds and rubies and sapphires and, you know, golden, you know, chain, golden necklaces and golden bracelets and all these things. So he replaced, he took her fruits and filled it up with jewels. But the most valuable treasure that he gave her was Krishna Prema, that she got love for Krishna by that, by her offering. So this woman was very, very blessed. And Krishna says here, Prabhupada quotes in the purport the verse, Patram pushpam phalam toyam yo me bhakti prayachati taraham bhakti paharitam ashnami payatatmanaha. that whoever says Krishna is so kind that if anyone offers a leaf, a fruit, a flower, or some water, he will immediately accept it as long as it's offered with bhakti. So also this woman, it didn't matter that she was from, she was just a tribal person. Krishna wasn't like, oh, I only accept offerings from Brahmins or, you know, it doesn't matter. So what we see from this pastime is that, Krishna's ready to engage in loving exchanges with anybody. It doesn't matter which country you're from, which gender, which class you're born in, whether you're rich or whether you're poor, whether you're educated, whether you're uneducated, whether you're a Christian or a Hindu or a Muslim or an atheist or whatever. You know, if somehow or other you're attracted to Krishna and somehow or other you want to offer something to Krishna, then Krishna's happy to accept and he will reciprocate. And he reciprocates millions of times over. You know, we give him one little thing and she gave him just some wild forest fruits and he gave her the valuable jewels. So what's important is not the item. It's not the item that we give Krishna, but it's the love. The important thing is the love and affection. And then everyone should just give according to their means. Okay. Oh, there's another story here that I forgot about. All right. So one day Krishna was out playing with Balaram and the boys, and they went down to the riverside, and they're playing all kinds of sports and games. It's like little kids playing, and Krishna's been out playing all morning. So Madhya Yashoda, it's time for lunch, and she's worried because it's been a long time since breakfast and he's been playing outside and he's probably really hungry and he's probably getting tired and weak and he really needs to eat. So she's like, that's what mothers are like, right? They always want to make sure that especially small children, because small children can sometimes get so absorbed in playing that they totally forget to eat. Somehow that doesn't happen to us when we get older. We're very focused on eating. Sometimes we can get so absorbed in eating that we can forget about other things we need to do. But small children, they're just very like, they're just so into playing that they can like hours and hours can pass and the mother can be like, come and eat. No, I'm playing. So that was the situation. Krishna's playing with his friends. And first Madhya Yashoda is busy in the house. So she sends Rohini, Balaram's mother. And Rohini goes there and, come on boys, it's time for lunch. Come, please come back. We're all waiting for you to eat. We're not gonna eat till you eat. But still they just kind of ignore her and go on playing. So then she goes back and she said, well, Yashoda, I tried, but they just won't come. And I can't drag them all over. So then Mother Yashoda says, okay, I'm going myself. So she goes. And it's described that even that because Mother Yashoda is so loving, not that Rohini is not loving, but yet Yashoda is just like the personification of parental love. So, and Rohini is Balaram's mother, but Balaram feels like more connected even with Yashoda than his own mother. Because just Mother Yashoda is just like an ocean of love. She's just like the maternal figure in everybody's life in Raj. Even the gopis of Vrindavan, the girl, young little girls, everybody loves Mother Yashoda. Everybody just wants to, get the blessings of Mother Yashoda in their lives because she's such an amazing person. So, and for that, she became the mother of the Supreme Personality of Godhead because she's just the best mother ever. She's just like everything that if you think of like the ideal mother, like the qualities of an ideal mother, Mother Yashoda has all those and more million times over. So, yeah. So when Mother Yashoda calls them, it says that she goes there and she's like, my dear Krishna, lotus-eyed Krishna, come here and drink the milk of my breast. It's all about. And then she says, you must be very tired because of playing for so long. That's enough. You don't need to go on playing anymore. Just come. And then she calls Balaram. And so then she says, your father's waiting. And he needs to get on with his work and he's starving, but he won't eat till you're here. So don't keep him suffering from hunger pangs like that. Just come home. Still, he's hesitating. Then she says, Krishna, you're covered with dust and sand. You need to come back and take a bath. Actually, you know, it's your birthday. The things that we need to do, you need to give charity to the Brahmins, and the Brahmins are there waiting for you, and you're just messing around here in the dirt. What are we going to do with you? Just come home. And still he's like, oh no. Then she says, look, all of your friends, they're already going home. Their mothers are calling them. Some of them are already home. They're taking their bath. They're getting cleaned up. They're sitting down to eat. And you're just like a homeless street child here playing. So she's like using every approach that she can. And then she just goes there and takes Krishna by the hand and gets Balaram by the hand and brings them back. So she brings them back to the house. And then the mothers give them, she bathes Krishna, Rohini bathes Balaram. They get them all dressed. And then in the purport, your Prabhupada says, Krishna's always neat, clean, and opulent. He doesn't need to be washed, bathed, or dressed. Yet Madhya Yashoda, because of affection, considered him her ordinary child and did her duties to keep her son brilliant. That's funny. That's sweet. So then she brings the boys, when they're all dressed and clean, she brings them over to the table. Nandamaraj is sitting there. And then he, like, they go there and give him a hug, and he, like, hugs them like this, the two of them at the same time. And then he takes them on their lap, his lap, for a little bit, like one on each leg, and then he's cuddling them. And then he's like, okay, let's take prasad. Mm-hmm. Then they take prasad.
Oh, is that picture that usually is depicted
with Krishna sitting on his lap? Maybe. Could be. Okay, so then, because we were hearing about all these demons, you know, there was Putana, there was Shakatasura, there was Trinavarta, and so the Nanda Maharaj and the elder cowherd men, they're getting very worried. Like, it seems like this place where we're living is not a very auspicious place to live. And of course, they don't know anything about Kamsa trying to kill Krishna. The only thing that they knew was Vasudeva had said, hurry back to Gokul, because there may be some disturbances there. He didn't give any indication of the cause, the reason behind them. He just said, there's going to be trouble. So they're not thinking anything like it has anything to do with Krishna, and that wherever we go with Krishna, there are going to be these demons coming. They're just thinking, this place is not very auspicious. There's so many disturbances. So let's go somewhere else. But actually it was Krishna that inspired them from within their heart, because Krishna, now he's growing up, he's getting a little older. So like boys, when they, you know, when they're small, they just play in the yard or they play in the little neighborhood. But when they get a little older, they want to, like, really, you know, expand their territory and, you know, venture into, you know, show off to the girls. They want to venture into, like, new fields and explore forests and hills and mountains. And Krishna knows that in Vrindavan, there's Govardhan Hill, there's this huge mountain full of caves, there's the Yamuna River that's amazing for swimming. And he's thinking, that's the place I want to be. That's like better than this Gokul. So then he inspires them to all, like, decide, okay, let's move to Vrindavan. So then they have a meeting, they announce to everyone in the village that, all right, everyone, pack it up, we're moving out. And it's amazing how, like, there's so much solidarity amongst the villagers that they all just are like, okay, yep. And they all pack up, they load all their belongings into bullock carts, they yoke up the bulls, they get all the cows, and the cows go in front, and they're following behind, and they make special arrangements for the women and the children. Everybody's like comfortable. And I was thinking that it's amazing, because nowadays, I mean, that would never happen. It's not like the whole village is going to, you know, it's like each family is going to consider, or each individual is going to consider, you know, what's really best for us and decide for themselves. It's not like, all right, the head of our village decided we're moving, let's go. So, but this is what it's like, you know, in the spiritual world, that community is such a big thing, you know, like you hear about the community. So if we want to go back to Godhead, we need to learn how to live in communities where people are united, where people care about each other and support each other, and they stick together. And if anyone's in trouble, they're all there to help. And so we should try to make our communities like that too. devotee communities, Krishna house community, Krishna lunch community. Just try to like be really friendly and caring. So, okay. So then they're going in the procession. I was listening to, there's not so much discussed here in the Bhagavatam about that procession, but in Ananda Vrindavan Champu, there's a long description about it. And it's really pretty how, you know, it describes the bullock carts, that even though they're like cowherd people, they're not poor. They're not like, you know, destitute farmers or something. They're actually like very opulent, that all of the carts, they have, you know, they're covered with these kind of like dome-like covers, and they're like gold plated domes, and they've got these different colors, silk flags blowing. And so that they're going like that. And they've got, there's this hundreds and hundreds, and there's millions of cows, and the cows are on the front. And then they don't make it there all in one day, but they have to stop and camp during the night. So then they arrange all the bullock carts in like a circle. And then they have like a community gathering place in the middle. And then some people are cooking, other people are, you know, doing this. And then they still have to take care of the cows, because the cows still need to be milked, right? It's like, you got to always milk the cows twice a day, every day, whether you're here, there, or anywhere. So then some people are milking the cows, and other people are, you know, boiling the milk, and other people are cooking the dinner, and other people are taking care of, you know, it's just like, it's a camping. Yeah, they're camping out. That's what they're doing. They build a fire there in the middle, and they're all sitting around there, and they're like singing songs and having fun, you know? It's like a, and then the cows are white. So it's described like, in the beginning, the cows, they find a little place to lie down. And it looks like there's like a small little pond of milk. And then after, because there's someone, then all the cows, because cows are very like social, so they all want to be together. Like, you know, the goshala, it's like one lies down, the other one lies down like right next, like leaning against the other one. You've seen it? And then they'll all just mob up. So they're all like, you know, totally against each other. And so the some cows, it's like a little milk pool. And then afterwards, like they all come, and then it becomes like the milk ocean. It's just like this vast thing of white cows, like a milk ocean. And so then in the morning, so it says 3 hours before sunrise, the women wake up and they go out and start churning the butter, because the men milk the cows the day before, and then they boil it. And then during the night, the cream all rises to the top, and then they skim off the cream, and they got to churn that in the butter. Because that's how, like, they...
It looks like really high cholesterol.
Really nice carbs, because you know how hard it is to churn
it takes a long time like that, right?
Yeah, cool.
Yeah,
like one of the
yeah, they didn't need to go to the gym, yeah, because they churn butter, they grind the grains, yeah. And yeah, even nowadays, like if you go to villages in India, it's like people are not overweight. They're very healthy, because they do things like they wash the clothes by hand, they carry water, they pump the thing, and they work, you know, they go and get firewood and carry it. So they're all like really healthy and strong. Even in a temple, like in temple in Mayapur, you know, when these little old ladies bump into you, they're like bricks. It's like you got hit by a log, you know, like, you know, you expect the female body to be a little soft. No way. And these old ladies, yeah, they're so strong. They're like wiry. It's insane. Anyways, so yeah, so the women wake up and they're churning the butter and they're singing songs. And it's just like this nice atmosphere. You know, it's like just before dawn, the sky's just starting to clear. You hear this ch-ch-ch and the jingling of the bangles, tingle, tingle, and ch-ch-ch. And they're singing nice songs about Krishna, and, you know, and then everybody's waking up in that beautiful like scene. And then, and then they pack up their stuff. And as described also, like in the camp, they make like paths, they make footpaths and everything for people to walk. And there's like designated areas for this and that. So then they need to cross the Yamuna, because between Gokul and Vrindavan, there's the Yamuna. And, there's a whole description by Kavi Karnapur about how the cows all cross. They go swimming. The bigger cows are swimming. And so first the cows get in and they're swimming, but because they're heavy, they're slow. And then the calves jump in, but the calves are like really excited to swim in the water. And they're passing all the cows. So the cows start first, but the cows, all these little cows come swimming, they pass all the mothers and they go like ahead. They get there ahead. And then there are the little baby calves. So the baby calves, it says that the men take them and they're too small to swim. So they put them like with the, on their shoulders, like with the feet in the front. So the body of the calf is here and the head's kind of like over here and the legs are here. And so the cowherd man, he, with his left arm, he's holding the legs like this so that it doesn't fall off his shoulders. And with the right arm, swimming. like that. So, yeah. And then, what's that? Yeah, can't leave one behind. And then the women, and so the cows and the men go swimming across, and then they bring some ferry boats to put the carts on. They put the carts go on the ferry boats, and the women and children are on the carts, and they get ferried across. So like that. And then they go to Vrindavan, and they start a new life there.
Does it say how long was the journey, like, go
through that? It didn't say, like, it didn't give a measurement of, like, kilometers or miles.
No, I mean, like a couple of days.
Oh, how long it took. No, I think it just took, I think they just spent one night camping. The next day they arrived.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so I think that's all we're going to cover today, because we are just about out of time.
Is this place still a place?
What? Vrindavan, yeah.
I heard that cows can grant
riches in Vrindavan. Yeah, there's Saravi's cows. Like the trees also, you can pray to the trees. Mm-hmm. And you can, yeah.
Yeah,
Gokul is also a place, Mahavan, in Mahavan.
Yeah,
there's
everything.
Hmm? Yeah, everything
is there.
Have you been there? Gokul's not, I mean, the in Mahavan, the sand is so soft. It's like baby powder. It's crazy. It's so soft. And they have a little place there where they say is the place where Krishna broke the butter pot and the Damodar Lila was performed there. You been that place?
Yeah.
There's like a little shrine with this like ancient butter pot, ancient pot in it. I don't know. They probably just put any old pot there. But yeah. All these places are there. So, you know, you can go to these places and every, at this time of year, actually every year, they do what's called Vraj Mandal Parikram, where they walk. They spend a whole month walking around the whole Vrindavan area and visiting all the places where they performed all these pastimes.
Right.
So they'll go to this place and then senior devotees tell the story. Like, this is where Krishna did this. And they tell the whole story and then they'll walk on and then they'll stop another place. And this is where Krishna did this pastime and everybody gets into it. And they'll, you know, they'll stop somewhere and they'll have lunch and then they'll just pass all day walking. And then they camp wherever they have camps at the nighttime. They set up these big like tents and the devotees sleep in the tents and they cook for the devotees. And then next day they have a little morning program in the camp with Mangalarti and Japa and Guru Puja and class. And then they start walking again. And they do that every day for like a whole month. And they go to all the different places. Every pastime took place. And that's really nice. That's going on now. They do it in Mayapur too for Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. We've done it many times today in Mayapur. Yeah.
So just like Vrindavan and all this.
Yeah. Yeah, Vraj is like the big, is a large area. So Vraj includes even Mathura is in Vraj Mandal. It's called Vraj Mandal, like the whole big circular area. So in there, yeah, you've got Vrindavan, Gokul, Govardhan, Radhakund, Shamakund, Varshana, Nandagram, all these places, Talavan. Yeah, many places. All right. Let's wrap it up then. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Kartik ki jai. Gaura Premanandi.
Hare Krishna.